Robinhood Radio presents Stage Right or Not with Michelle Willems. Michelle is a longtime journalist and herself is a published playwright of several theatrical works. She's a frequent contributor to the Huffington Post, Daily Beast, and the Atlantic websites.
Well, this week I'm reporting from the Deep South. It's been a fascinating experience, which I'll chat about in a moment. But first, theater being my beat, let's get up on some pretty substantial Broadway news. The closings of shows continues, those Tony Awards, or lack thereof, having done some serious punishment. The latest to announce her final acts are King Kong and The Cher Show. Yes, Stephanie Block won the Tony for portraying one of the three Chers, but that did not seem enough. Block is known to New York theater goers, to out-of-town visitors, not so much. And let's face it, word of mouth had the final say. The same is true with King Kong, which is in fact a show for tourists, but ultimately couldn't keep roaring. But both those productions are expensive. Between Bob Mackie's elaborate costumes and the puppeteering of the giant ape, they did not come close to meeting the investors' hopes and dreams. Now, there are ways of saving shows, well, if you know the right person, like Ryan Murphy, for example, one of the powerhouses of television. Even though The Prom, which he helped produce on Broadway, has announced its closing, Murphy is going to do a version for the small screen, albeit with big names, Meryl Streep, Nicole Kidman, James Corden, and Keegan-Michael Kay, among others. So take that, Broadway. While I am never happy to see money and hard work fail, I must say I cheered the shutting of Be More Chill, which felt like a mediocre and slightly cynical high school project. Now, I had predicted all those closings, and now let's keep an eye on Beetlejuice and Oklahoma. Yes, I know Oklahoma just won Best Revival, but half-price tickets are already being sold, and the audience reaction is wildly mixed on this wildly reimagined production. One more Broadway note, yet another revival of Harold Pinter's Betrayal appears to be on its way. This production is coming from the West End and stars British heartthrob Tom Hiddleston. Now, keep in mind, the last time Betrayal came, it was with British heartthrob Daniel Craig. And while it sold out most that limited run, it was considered a weak version of this three-character play. One of my favorites when it's done pitch perfect and one that can so easily go off-key. Okay, now let me tell you a bit about the drama I've encountered on this journey through Mississippi, Little Rock, Memphis, Tennessee, and Birmingham, Selma, and Montgomery in Alabama. Well, this was billed as an historical trip about the civil rights movement, but I must say at this moment it feels like, well, as one local said, there's just no past, there's just concurrent. While there are no whites-only signs and people aren't sitting in, there is obvious economic inequality almost everywhere, and folks are standing up in other ways, including taking some responsibility for their former ways. Mostly this is happening through the increasing number of fascinating museums. Jackson, Mississippi's Civil Rights Museum is a tough, if wordy, look at itself, and is definitely this ghost town of a capital city's biggest attraction. The most popular museum in the South these days is a legacy museum in Montgomery, along with its stunning National Memorial for Peace and Justice, dedicated to those who were lynched. 4,000 names adorn steel monuments along with those of the counties from which they came. More than 400,000 visitors have come since its opening only a year ago. Now, Memphis also offers a hugely traveled civil rights museum connected to the Lorraine Hotel. How do you get more dramatic than standing a few feet from the balcony where Martin Luther King was gunned down by a sniper across the street? Equally moving are the small sites that have turned into museums of a sort. Visiting the Jackson, Mississippi home of Medgar Evers, for example, walking on the driveway where he was murdered in front of his family. Their children were made to always stay below the windows, and they kept the refrigerator against the door, explained our guide and Evers' old friend Minnie Watson. Rob Reiner's film, Ghosts of Mississippi, used the house as a location, which helped get it in better shape to allow for visitors. Speaking of movies, The Help was filmed around Greenwood in Mississippi, still a source of pride for the locals. I was fed a delicious lunch by a delightful woman named Mary Hoover, who served the cast and crew and even played a small role in the movie. She and her husband Sylvester are playing major ones in real life, trying to preserve and promote the history and beauty and current needs of the Delta. And you can also tour the small house in Montgomery where Martin Luther King lived for 6 years. There you are standing in his bedroom, his library, and looking at fake carnations that he apparently sent Coretta from Memphis. When she called him to ask why he sent artificial ones that time, he said, "Well, so you'll have something to remember me by." He was killed 12 hours later. In Sumner, Mississippi, the name Emmett Till reverberates. While it is not a museum, one can enter the courthouse where that horrid case was argued. There is talk, by the way, of bringing the case back since new light has been shed on the dark murder of that 14-year-old boy. Well, who knows who or what Emmett Till would have grown up to be as a man, but his short life certainly had impact. Some officially credit that as a true start of the civil rights movement. I also was privileged to visit a very old and largely unknown house in Memphis, now called the Slave Haven. It was owned by an abolitionist named Jacob Burkle and was used as an underground railroad stop. You stand in the tiny, dark basement cellar, and it's hard to imagine how those running to freedom could have stayed silent there for days until a nearby boat was ready. This is drama beautifully retold by the dedicated guides who are performers of a sort. In Little Rock, no surprise, there is the Bill Clinton Presidential Library. This is a gorgeous, green-approved building, and one can't help but be amazed by how much work goes into these presidential libraries, all privately funded, remember. Virtually every document from Clinton's 8 years is here in some form, along with a day-to-day calendar. Yep, the impeachment is right up there with the others. As for music in Memphis, particularly Beale Street, of course, it's everywhere. Stax Records offers a great tour in that city. That's where just about every gospel and rhythm and blues artist like Otis Redding, Sam and Dave, and so many more recorded. The B.B. King Museum and his gravesite are also worth visiting in the Delta area of Mississippi. He pretty much defined the blues, and his rise from a poverty-stricken childhood is nothing less than miraculous. But, you know, as I look back over this journey, I think of the women who played such pivotal roles in the civil rights movement. Yes, of course, there was Rosa Parks, and there's a nice museum and library for her in Montgomery. You're standing on the corner where that infamous bus made history. But I learned of so many other important names, Ella Baker, Fannie Lou Hamer, Margaret Walker. And when you set foot in the 16th Street Baptist Church in Birmingham, you think of the four little girls who were killed in the first deadly bombing in a city that was once nicknamed Bombingham. Their statues and others commemorating the Children's March reside in a lovely park across the street. Reverend Carolyn McKinstry was a young volunteer at that church on that fateful day. She had seen the girls in the basement restroom, and that's where they died. She has become an in-demand speaker on conflict mediation and so much more. I still remember the sermon that day, she says. It was called Love and Forgiveness. She was one of several remarkable women who I felt honored to meet. Minnie Watson, in her 80s, is finishing up her long-time involvement with the Medgar Evers home. Annie Pearl and Selma walked the famous bridge as a young girl behind King all those decades ago. She is still actively working on voting rights and proudly told us, "I am expanding my legacy. I was in jail twice this year." And mostly I think about Elizabeth Eckford. She was one of nine brave black teenagers who attended Little Rock Central High for one traumatizing but finally historic year. Elizabeth went on to join the military but then moved back home to Little Rock. My experience with this small, shy, and admittedly still traumatized woman is probably the one I will hold on to the longest. "Did she feel like a hero?" I asked. "I was afraid every day," she said. "There was always someone saying something mean behind me, but I only looked back once." Well, if that's not drama, what is? So many stories, so many narratives to keep being told, and this is happening in the theater arena, as we know. One of my last reports here was about three challenging, brutally honest plays about the African-American experience, including Fairview, which won the Pulitzer this year. Aaron Sorkin's adaptation of To Kill a Mockingbird on Broadway certainly gives that story a contemporary twist. And let's not forget Jason Robert Brown's musical Parade, which dealt with the horrid lynching of a Jewish man named Leo Frank for a crime he did not commit. Or the group of 18 Italian immigrants who were lynched together in New Orleans in 1891. That was the subject of a forgotten film. Just this year, the mayor of New Orleans made an official apology on behalf of the city. Well, I'm in that city as we speak. A big day today here, by the way, representing another kind of death. The longtime turbulent newspapers are being merged into one. All that being said, it has been heartening to see that despite the incredible sadness of so many lives lost, there are people living day to day, going to their churches, singing their songs. They have fought for equality and are hoping we keep their stories going. As one person said to my group, okay, what will you do now that you know? Well, Jill, that's a good question.
I think that the first answer should be send. I don't know how many people actually go look at the things that they write about.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I'm trying to say is there's a certain context of actually going out into the world, as twee as that sounds. It can be quite helpful because when you are interpreting something through the prism of history or the filter, it's it is interesting, but it doesn't always have the same resonance. I'm not saying do one the exclusion of the other. I'm saying it's like, all right, you're writing about this. Go see it. Go smell it. Go feel it. Go hear it. And then come back and add it to what you're producing. Because, again, it ends, it seems that in many cases these stories, which are massively compelling, get told in a vacuum. Or in such a way, you're presented in such a way that you lose the humanity. By humanity, I mean the dynamic of it's like this is happening to real people who also go home and have to figure out how to pay their bills, pet their dogs, feed their kid. And that is usually distilled in drama, understandably.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, the poverty that we saw, towns, streets where there's just no people or there's shanties, it's that really, and I was happy, by the way, to see lots of student groups, at some of them, obviously at the museums, which are filled with African-American visitors, by the way. This has been good for the South, all these new museums and monuments and memorials. It's actually been good for business. Not enough, but I'm glad to see so many young people, because who knows what they get in school. I don't even know when I was in school. Did I know who Emmett Till was?
Yes.
I don't think so. Maybe I did. I don't know. I was in Santa Monica, California. I'm not sure I did. But, the only black person I knew played on my brother's Little League team. It's just we never stop learning, and we should never stop learning. And I'm not saying got to go out and get on a. I mean, I took a 6.5-hour Greyhound bus to get here to New Orleans, and people said, "Oh, why are you doing that? Isn't there a flight again?" And I said, "I want to do this. I want to go on the bus. I want to be on that bus with other people who take these buses all the time, And yeah, they're sad, I looked at those drivers and I think, God, when is he going home to his family? I don't know. Endless stories that we don't read about, we don't see in our daily lives, and they're always worth retelling.
Stage Right or Not with Michelle Willens, produced in the studios of Robin Hood Radio, robinhoodradio.com.